Hello, fans of Hawk Talk Podcast. We're back with another great episode of the show. And of course, we're joined by our usual co-host, Pete. But then we also have another special guest on the show, Matt. Matt and Pete, how are you guys doing? Nope. Pete's waiting for Matt. Matt's waiting for Pete. It's okay. We're gonna plow through this awkwardness.
We're far too polite. I actually wasn't even being polite. I was muted. That was my fault. I was blabbering. No, good. Thanks for setting this up. This is great.
We're off to a great start. Pete, now you can go.
Yeah, you know, turning over the ball, it kind of felt like there. Doing good. Happy to have Matt on, get some insight as to like where he thinks we're at, Tony. I think that's kind of where I want to go with this. I sort of set this up to see where we're at after sort of a little bit half the halfway mark as we're getting closer and closer to March. Like, where are our expectations at? What have we seen that we've liked? Hoping to get the ball rolling and see what we have to get started with today. So,
but before we get to that, Matt, Yeah. Before we get to that, I need to get both of your opinions, maybe to start on a lighter note. What did we think of Usher? So I've heard conflicting things. So I'm not gonna preface with anything. We're gonna start the show with a light topic, real quick. This I will pass the ball directly. Matt, what did you think of Usher at halftime?
So I think definitely like age wise, I'm 39, soon to be 40. I think I'm very much the target age demographic that they were going for with that. I think they were very much honing in. I was joking. I was watching with friends last night, and I was like, how many of you, the women that were there, I was like, how many of you had Usher posters in your locker room, in your lockers in middle school and high school? And it was like a lot. So 38, 39 to like mid 40s, I think that's what they wanted. I thought it was fine. I mean, the way I feel about all these halftime things is like, it's hard because you're doing like minute snippets of like a handful of different songs. And it just feels like a really bad video montage half the time. He was very sweaty. I liked Alicia Keys coming out, and it was fine. It was like a B.
It was a B. I'm a B. Pete, what did you think?
Tony and Matt, and I don't care the slack I get for this. I didn't watch the Super Bowl.
What?
Not yet.
Oh, man.
That's didn't the opposite of what I wanted.
I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I was too busy prepping for this podcast. I'm in college, but I'm St. Joe's expert, you know? I'm watching film.
Oh, no.
There's no time. No time for the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God.
No.
When Usher put the – Pete, just to let you know, Usher put some rollerblades on, and he was skating around around the stage. I was thoroughly impressed. I'm going to put it like
the performance
that.
Was great. Like, he's so talented.
Yeah.
It's just like – even like a couple of years ago when it was the one with like Dr. Dre and like all the rap, even that, I was like, Snoop it was Dog. Fine.
Yeah.
They're all fine. Like, it's okay. Yeah. I was hoping to get like a little, I was hoping that there might be like another cameo in there. Like, you know, there's like rumors about Justin Bieber getting out there.
See, that's what I wanted.
For him.
Yeah.
But that didn't materialize. I think you had Ludacris at the end. You had Lil Jon out there. It was fine.
Yeah.
He's talented. Halftime was fine.
We had Ludacris at a spring concert one year, didn't we?
That was my first concert ever. Ludacris, yeah. My freshman year.
How about that?
That was Ludacris itself. Okay, Matt, let's talk about basketball. That's enough. That's enough icebreaking moment. Okay.
Enough Usher content.
That's enough Usher content. Even though I thought it was great. Okay, we'll pass it to you. Matt, we haven't spoken to you in a while. You have the floor. Say what you need to say just to kick us off. It's okay. We're not going to guide you on this one.
Yeah, no. So I think correct me if I'm wrong. I think the last time we talked, and I could be wrong, was it after the UMass game?
Yes, it was after the win. Yes, it was because we were trying to figure out how we're going to win three in a row. I think it was technically after the first two losses, Loyola, okay. Chicago, St. Louis.
Gotcha. St. Joe's is fifth. They were picked preseason fifth. So I don't know if I would have had them getting there the way they have. I feel like so many times these conversations that we have, and we had these at the beginning of the year, where like, oh, if they hadn't blown the 20-point lead to St. Louis, and then if they hadn't done this, like, they could be, instead of being 6-5 right now, they could be 8-3. And I get that, and at times I go there, but like, my goodness, they could also be, I mean, they very realistically right now could be not 6-5. they could absolutely be like 4-7. Like, I mean, think about all these close games. Like the St. Louis game, Lynn doesn't pick that steal up. Parker, I feel like Parker hadn't missed that half. Like, he scores there, you lose that. The Duquesne game, the UMass game, the, what else was there thrown in there? The George Mason game. Like
LaSalle. LaSalle was not a guaranteed win by no means.
No, I mean, this team, and that's the thing that's so funny is like, I feel like we're so used to talking about blown leads and close losses at the end, but man, this team has won a lot of close games at the end too. They are, and I guess you take that for what it's worth. Like, you could also say these games shouldn't be that close at the end. And I certainly think with that St. Louis game, and you were up 71-60 with the ball with Xavier with an open wing three to go up 14. And next thing you know, you're in a game that's going to the last possession. So I still don't think they really have fully figured out what they are. And I don't mean that like super critically. And I guess that's where I am right now. Like, I don't think they fully know where they are. Like, they play differently in different games. Like, anybody going into this year would have thought that Eric was going to be the closer in every game. Clearly this was Xavier in the last game, and I'm not saying it was like a passing of the torch and from here on out it's going to be X over Lynn starting and him with the ball at the end, but like, it kind of felt that way a little bit.
Yeah,
to me.
And I wanted to ask you about that. That was something we had actually talked about. Someone had written into the show and asked about that. Hey, when do we start X Brown? And then literally a game later after the Dayton loss, there's X Brown starting. And you know, the thing is, I don't think Lynn played poorly coming off the bench. No. I think he did his job. He showed up. He passed the ball really well. I saw a little bit more baseline movement, which was a good thing against St. Louis. But defensively, it's like, now you see, you know, it's so funny. We were talking earlier in the season, how good's Kreese, blah, blah, blah. And we were on some awkward Twitter spaces when, you know, people were questioning it. But then you're like, defensively, it's like, when we watch St. Louis, it's like, we really needed him. Like, really needed him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that they're in like kind of a, again, I guess if you're like, well, where are you right now? To me, it's like, I think they're still figuring stuff out. Like, I still think that they're figuring out who their closer offensively is. I get the impression that Eric is not fully right now, just based on the way I'm watching him move. He doesn't look right. And I'm not saying that to excuse the last kind of subpar games he's had, but anytime I see a guy, and granted, like, he shot more threes probably than I'd like to see him shoot this year. I'd like to see him attack more. But these last two games in particular, he's doing nothing but shooting threes, which leads me to believe he had that really nice, like, reverse finish on the break where X had, like, that, like, well, I don't even want to say bounce pass. It's almost like a drop pass. But overall, like, he doesn't seem to be quite as explosive. And maybe that could be why X was closing out the last game. But yeah, they don't really know what they are yet. And that could be both exciting and frustrating, figuring out where they are with their guards, seeing how they play with Kreese, how they don't, how to navigate Rashear with foul trouble. Like, I mean, it's wild to me that Anthony Finkley has like just completely eclipsed Katsber on in terms of playing time and productivity. I didn't see this happening. I don't really know what's going on there. To have a guy that for such long stretches last year, like, I know he doesn't always get a ton of credit, but like, there was a stretch last year before, like, toward the end of the year where Casper was playing phenomenal basketball, like, really good. And he's out there now and he just doesn't look like the same player at all. So yeah, like, figuring out, like, I don't think Anthony Finkley was, I didn't think he was going to play this much this year, and the rotation and Billy figuring out his defense. And I don't know. I think it's a very unfinished product. And I think the way the A-10 this is, you're just a close before throwing it to Pete. I think Dayton is definitely the best team. I need to see more of Richmond. I think Richmond's really good. But, like, say, like, 3 through 11, I think the St. Joe's team can absolutely beat anyone. And I would even maybe include Dayton in that. That game, just, like, a lot of things went weird and kind of spiraled. But, man, they could lose to anybody, and they got to figure this out. They don't have that much season left.
I think it's interesting. I think the 8-10 is just better than I thought it would be from, like, a standpoint of, like, there's 2 or 3 teams with Loyola, Chicago, and Richmond that are just off the bat. Maybe we should have had higher expectations, but Loyola, Chicago is I don't have it right in front of me, but I think they're like 9-2 or 7-2, right, in A-10 play. And they're just like on a tear. Like within the A-10, I feel like no one expected them to be where they are today. Let me see. Yeah, 9-2. And then Richmond, Matt. Like when we're thinking about what I thought St. Joe's would be, I just guess there's teams that are just better than what I expected. Looking at, like, performance-wise, it's surprising. SBM posted a graphic with, like, the top performers in the league. We have 2 of the top 20 performers in the A-10, in Eric Reynolds and Rashier Fleming. But, like, that doesn't even include X Brown. So it's interesting, like, where everything's falling into place and how things move forward. So I guess, like, as we think about where we are in the league, does 5 still feel right to you guys? Like, does 5th in the A-10 still seem like where you expect us to be?
Ben, you can answer that one.
Yeah, so the one thing that I think is worth, so, like, I personally think that VCU at the moment is a better basketball team than Loyola Chicago. From what I've seen, I think that if VCU had their full roster going back through all of non-conference, I think that would be a team that would be in play for an at-large. I really do. I think that that's a really good VCU team. So, I mean, if I'm looking at who I think is definitely better and will finish better than St. Joe's, for sure, Richmond, Dayton, Loyola Chicago is up, what, 2 games on St. Joe's, I think, right now?
Yeah, they're 9-2, and so, what, we are 6-5? So technically 3 games.
Oh, so 3. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of that can change Wednesday, right? Like, if St. Joe's can win at Loyola Chicago and gain a full game there, then maybe you have a chance at closing that gap. And obviously VCU being ahead there too, you play at VCU. I don't know. Like, Loyola, I think, has a great home field home court advantage. That's probably the best students, one of the best student sections in the A-10. I don't necessarily, like, watching that Loyola Chicago St. Joe's game, I didn't get the impression that was a better team than St. Joe's. I think St. Joe's did some really dumb things at the end of that. I think St. Joe's 10 win at Loyola. Like, I don't think that's an impossibility. So, yeah, I mean, I think 5th is probably fair. I really do like that UMass team. I do think that Bonaventure's, like, I don't know. I think St. Joe's will probably finish somewhere in the 5, 6, 7 range. I'd go there more than finding a way to get the 4. That seems hard. So, yeah, I mean, 5th seems, I guess, probably not where I would have wanted, but realistically where it'll be.
And it's so funny because UMass is one of those teams that has been on the other end of, like, the bad luck.
Gosh.
Right? They're like what we could have been, right? Where it's like every game just didn't go your way, which is, like, brutal. I got to say, like, Matt, this kind of, like, goes, and I already gave you props on our last episode, just so you're aware. But I said that you were literally, hold on, let me kiss your butt a little bit more.
Yeah, seriously,
dang. But, like, what I was saying, like, on that other episode, I was saying, it's like, look, we're playing to learn how to beat other teams, right? And I think we've learned a lot against playing against Dayton. I think we've learned a lot against all these teams. And so just got to get a couple games above 500. And the season's, it is dwindling down. Like we had said back in December, 8-10 play starts fast. And we lost three games to start. And it's so hard to make those games up. I think just playing for the bye, like some form of a bye in the A-10 tournament, learning how to beat those teams, kind of sticking to what you had said earlier in the A-10 season when we were down, you know, two or three games. I think it's still the formula. Nothing has really truly changed other than winning the games we should win, and we need to maybe throw in an upset here or there. Maybe we can beat Richmond at the end of the season and get an extra win more than what we thought we were. I think we're due for an upset somewhere on the calendar. I don't think beating George Mason is an upset. I don't think no one thinks beating St. Louis is an upset. But I think there are those games still out there where we can get maybe one or two games above 500 and make sure that we're a really solid seed and get that favorable matchup. I think that's what we're playing for.
I mean, I'm going to give a take that like nobody's going to agree with. You two won't, and probably no one across the board will. These are 19 and 20-year-olds. This team doesn't have a ton of depth, but if Kreist is healthy, there is some semblance of depth. I would rather be a 5 or a 6 seed with a favorable matchup and not have the double bye. Because, like, again, the seeding's weird. Like, you could end up in that first – like, you could end up with the double bye and be so excited – and then your first game, you could have a game where you're in a really tough spot the way that this conference is so bunched together. Like, give me the 5 seed or 6 seed with a more favorable path and one more game than the 4 seed and just, like, right off the jump have a game where you absolutely could lose. This team has enough players. I don't think playing one extra game is going to be, like, a completely debilitating scenario. Obviously you need a bye. Like, you can't just have the floor fall out here, but like if you can get to 10-8 and fit in that 5-6 and see what happens, like I don't think that's the worst situation ever.
I think it's interesting. One more thing, and this is sort of a little off topic. I think Xavier Brown's performance has sort of not stunned but changed the way Eric plays, and it's resulted in from a preseason conversation of like Eric Reynolds is going to win A-10 player of the year to now he's not really in that conversation anymore, at least like with his recent performance he's not definitively in that conversation anymore. So what your thoughts were on that, guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the really nice thing that you could say about everybody, I think everybody across the board on this team, is that they care more about winning than they care about their, like, individual metrics. And even a guy like Eric, who has generated draft buzz and all that stuff, like, I think ultimately he will want to win more than anything else. His body language throughout everything this season, except, I mean, you could say a couple things about that Dayton game, but, like, I don't know really. In that game just sort of was a worst case, like everything went wrong type of situation. Even in games where Eric's not playing well, even in games where he's taking 5 shots, like he's never really sulking. He's never really moping. I haven't yet seen him this year, like yell at a teammate or like if someone's missed a play or missed a shot, I've never seen him like get after anyone, which is, I don't know. Maybe we're taking it for granted. Like, kids that like players that good often don't have his demeanor in terms of like kind of rolling with stuff and not getting upset when stuff doesn't come to him. But yeah, like he's definitely in a little bit of a funk here. But I guess your exciting thing, right, is like there's enough guys on this team that can go off at a given moment. Like Kreist has had monster games, Rashier's had monster games, Lynn has. Xavier definitely has shown that he can go hang 25 up. So Eric maybe doesn't feel like he needs to do that, but I think it's a better team when he is.
Not to mention Cameron Brown as well.
Yeah, And talk about, like, I mean, he's been playing the best basketball of his career, not just the shooting, but right, like we talked about with what was it, the Princeton game, that play he made with that rebound under the basket that probably won you that game.
Yep.
And then, I mean, then he does the same thing. Like, he does the same exact thing in that St. Louis game, like reads that situation. And I think you know the play I'm talking about, that one at the end where he forced the jump.
Yeah, he did.
I think Joe's put possession. That video out today.
Yeah.
And you could actually, like, with like that clip, their little recap starts with Billy talking. And he's basically saying, like, we're going for a jump first, then foul if we need to. And just where Cam was on that, they knew exactly. Like, say whatever you want about Billy, people do. I have. They knew what was going to happen there. Cam was in the right spot. Cam forced the jump ball and probably won you that game with that play again. So he's shooting the leather off it, and he's just made some really, like, mature plays. So I apologize for skipping him there.
It's all good. I think one thing that we can at least look at, it's like, oh, well, you know, what do we do now that we have X Brown and we have Lynn and we have Eric, what do we do with all three at the same time? I think there's great possibility for really changing up lineups. When we have a 8-point lead, let's put out something a little different and try to put our foot on the gas with a lineup this team, like someone else hasn't seen. Like me and Pete talked about on one show doing a truly small ball lineup with like Cam Brown at the four. If you're up 10 on a small, like a team that's not as good or is struggling to keep up with us, we really haven't put the foot down on an A-10 team yet this season, like blown the doors off of someone. We should be playing with lineups to figure out, like, hey, is there something that we have that other teams can't match up against, and trying to figure out what that is. Now, we haven't really had that opportunity, but I just think it's not really a sign of, oh, well, who should get the starting role? Whose ego should take over? I think it's more of a, what tools do we have to really expose other teams to make them truly uncomfortable? And at sometimes that may look awkward on the court, but as we said, what are we playing for? We're playing to learn how to win, because at the end of the day, we're not a number one seed anyway. So I think it's a little bit of a non-answer, but I think it's something that we should be considering if we're fans and we're thinking, oh, what the hell is Billy doing on this play? Well, maybe we're going to play with some different lineups just to see what works that may be a little bit untraditional just to win.
Yeah, it's funny. One thing that kind of, and this is something that's really, like, I think Lynn does so many great things out there. This is more just an observation, and like you guys can take, you can read whatever into numbers you want to read into numbers. It's like so true. And it's just one metric. But one thing really that, especially these last couple games, I've noticed with Lynn is just like the reluctance to shoot and what that does with spacing when he's out there. So I was curious, and I went back and looked, just like, okay, start out A-10 play. Lynn and X are both point guards, so like where are their numbers? So Lynn in 11 A-10 games is 2 for 16 from three. So he's made 2 threes in 11 A-10 games. He's only taken 16. X is 21 for 51. So you're talking, I mean, it just in terms of the spacing piece. And I think Pete or Tony, to tie into what you said, maybe then, if Lynn is going to be that reluctant of a shooter, and that really allows defenses to collapse the paint, and that's a killer. Like if you have Lynn, Kreese, and Rashear out there at the same time, it doesn't matter if the other two are Cam and Eric, who can shoot. That's just a tough lineup, because I know Rashear can make a three, Kreese can make a three, but it also allows defenses to really just close in on them, and like they don't have if they're just going to go under Lynn every time, and Lynn's ultimately probably the best in the paint, like on those turnarounds. I think Billy needs to figure out what he's going to do lineup wise with that. Cause like I'm going to, cause I want to do a piece on it before Wednesday. Just look at what those lineups look like when Lynn and insert two bigs are out there at the same time. Just like the offensive numbers, because 16 threes over 11 games from a point guard is tough, especially the way college basketball is played now. Like your guys got to make shots and take shots, and X is, and I feel like that's opened up everything else for him. And Lynn has been phenomenal this year. Like I love what he does. I was frankly a little shocked at the lack of shooting. when I went back at it. Because, like, the second half of last year, I went and looked, too. He was shooting, like, 40% from three over the last 10 games on, like, good volume. And now he just is not shooting.
I think the progression of Eric, Lynn, and X as, like, the ball in their hands at St. Joe's is really interesting. Like, Eric came to St. Joe's, Jordan Hall was the point guard, but Eric ended up having the ball in his hands a lot of the time, especially in late game situations. Second year, Lynn comes along. Lynn has the ball in his hands a lot more, especially during A-10 play. And I think in that way, was able to create for himself a little bit more with the ball in his hands. Now, X is here, and I think X, he has the ball in his hands, and he creates for others, but he's also just, like, wicked at creating for himself. And it ends up being that maybe Lynn is playing off ball a little bit more than he would like, especially from, like, a 3-point attempt rate scenario. I don't know if you guys agree or if you see the trend that I'm seeing there, but that's something that I at least perceive to be happening.
I mean, it's hard to be an off-ball guard at 6'2" if you're not shooting. Like, it's just really tough. Like, I love Lynn getting into the paint. I love his, like, defensive tenacity. I love so much about him. But you're right. Like, if he's going to be off ball and X is better with the ball in his hands than Eric, we were just talking a minute ago. How about we don't want Eric just being, like, a catch-and-shoot three guy. Like, that's selling his skill set so short. It's a weird dynamic because you have three guys who – to varying degrees are better with the balls in their hand. And, like, Eric is probably the best off ball. So therefore he's being the guy that's kind of at times
concerned about that,
being a catch and shoot guy when I don't think that's him at his best. I don't know. They got to figure some things out still, but it's a good problem to have. I mean, we've had years where there's been, like, one guy that can handle the ball. The fact that there's three now and some other guys that can in a pinch is a good sign.
For sure. It's interesting. I mean, great that Cam's finally having, like, some come out games. Shout out to Cam again for, like, just having great games when other guards have been not necessarily playing to their best.
Yeah, and I guess a quick little insert here, just kind of off track, and if it gets too off track, both of you just tell me to stop. But so I'm coaching my fifth grade son's rec basketball team. And after the last game, there was, like, a stretch in that game where there were four straight possessions where the ref on a jump ball gave the ball to the same team. Like, it was like, all right, jump ball, white team, next jump ball, white. And, like, the kids on my team are like, what's, like, it's alternating. And I was, like, trying to, I'm more about, like, sportsmanship. I'm like, guys, it is what it is. I'll talk to them, but do not yell. And then I was talking to some of my students today, and they were complaining about officiating in their, like, travel basketball games. I was like, guys, I'm watching pretty high-level college basketball games, and the officiating is really bad at that level too. And I'm not a yelling at the ref guy because I refereed throughout high school, and I get that it's a hard job. I can't remember the last, and we say this every year, but, like, multiple calls a game that are game-changing are being missed. And it's really unfortunate. And I know we're not the only fan base saying it. And the only reason I bring it up is because of, like, we have guys, there are guys on this team that get in foul trouble. And I feel like every game at this point, Rashier is getting a foul call or two where you're like, I'm not really sure what he did. And with creased out, Rashier can't have four fouls with 12 minutes left in the game. And some of these officiating little blunders, whether it be, like, missed foul calls or calls going the wrong way or seven steps being taken on a pass to the left wing. There's just, like, really some egregious stuff going on. I don't know how college basketball fixes it, but, like, I think it's going to come to a head during March Madness, and it's going to be a shame because, like, the human error, like, I almost feel like the level of play has gotten so high and officiating just can't keep up to the speed of it because the officials are not young. They're not keeping up. And the only reason I went on that little tangent is because I feel like Rashier specifically has been getting up, like, a pretty rough whistle lately. Kreese gets a rough whistle. So I don't know, just a little small tangent, but feel like there's like a little bit of an officiating epidemic going on.
I think we should have a coaching corner because Pete is also coaching a basketball team right now. So I think we should have Matt and Pete's coaching corner, new segment where we complain about the refs. Pete probably teaches his kids to yell at the refs though, knowing Peter.
For a while, my team's record was St. Joe's non-conference record or conference record. And it was driving me up. We would like lose and St. Joe's would lose. We'd win, St. Joe's would win. It was just driving me up. But Matt, this is good. Your son's 20, class of 2030. Get him ready for the A-10 refs. They're trash. We need him to be ready. When he can't be fazed by the bad calls. He has to learn to play through foul trouble.
Our team is 4-0, no thanks to the coaching. My son is averaging about 1.5 points per game. So we are trucking along in the South Jersey rec basketball department. But, it's like there are times with Billy that I wish that he got on the officials more. And especially after that Dayton game, when I was watching what Anthony Grant was doing all game, just like pounding the refs. But like, I don't know, it's a tough balance because I get wanting to be the bigger person. And when I coach, I try to be the bigger person. I'm also coaching fifth grade, like 10-year-old boys, not high stakes college basketball. So it's a little easier for me to just say it's not a big deal.
You're better than Travis Ford, who's like practically in the middle of the game when he's coaching, to the point where they said something on the broadcast for USA Net. I don't know if anyone like else or maybe the audience heard that, but they were literally like, look at Coach Ford. He is so enthusiastic. The guy's, they literally say, he's really literally almost in on the play. It's like, yeah, he's a little too close for comfort.
This was before he challenged a fan to a fight on center court after the game, but we don't need to go down that path.
No, we don't. We don't. Not after. You have a better. We're good. We said this. Me and Pete were talking about the Dayton game. We're like, we can't have Matt on the podcast because he does not go through that kind of stuff. Can't bring him through the mud.
The mute button has never been used as much as it was after that game. I don't block anybody on Twitter. I don't, unless it's like super, super like off the wall, like racist, whatever stuff. And then I'm going to block. But like the mute button got a heavy workout after the Dayton game.
It's there was like plays that were directly impacted by what Grant was saying though. Like that one travel call, it was just overturned. Yes. They just overturned it because he was complaining. As a ref, you just can't let that happen. You can't do that, no matter how.
And that was a good, and that was actually like one of the better officiating crews. Like that was a high level like Power Five officiating crew in for that game too. And I still was watching that game like oof. But it is what it is.
Yeah,
I want to bring us to another topic. We've kind of please, talked the X's and O's. I want to bring us to a very hot, even a more hot button topic. Hagen Arena charging $7.50 for a Yuengling beer. I'm sorry, Matt, but this is just unacceptable. Peter and I were talking about this. We need a $2 Yuengling night just so we could have another incident with Travis Ford. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. People that I was at the Dayton game, I feel like even at $7.50 a Yuengling, people were ready to go. I don't know how many of those were consumed in Hagen or the majority elsewhere beforehand, but for about a half there, that crowd definitely was buzzing in more ways than one. But yeah, $7.50 is steep.
Steep.
That's
it's imagine not, the it's possibilities. $2 beers. I mean, how could we go wrong?
Pete was coming up with so many ideas. Many he was ways. Texting us. The crimson, what was it called, Pete? What'd you call it?
Oh, yeah. Hawk sauce. I mean,
get sauce.
Hawk sauce gives you wings. That's not a catchphrase anywhere else. Hawk sauce
unlimited,
gives you wings.
Unlimited marketing possibilities.
Exactly.
That's why we have a department. Let's go to the actual predictions. Not predictions, but, you know, our last check-in was a pretty, you know, a while ago. And we're kind of coming up on our 45-minute mark, so figured we could close out with more of the what are we looking forward to. We've already talked a ton about this, and I feel like it's probably going to be repeated a little bit of, you guys have mentioned these talking points before. But I guess, Matt, looking towards the finish of the season, one, are we still on track to what you expected? Two, I'm going to throw you two at you. We were talking, me and Pete, about how the next – probably three games are the most important. If we win, then I guess I would consider the next three games the most important of the season, because if you can beat Loyola Chicago on the road, not an easy ask, but it is possible. And then Duquesne, I think we can beat them again. I don't think they're that, you know, we've seen this season that they're not invincible like they were when we were heading into it. Loyola Chicago has actually proven to be a more, or at least a better team and harder one to beat. And GW, if you win the next three ones, I mean, we're really setting ourselves up for a little bit of success towards the end of the season with only four or five games after that. So
yeah,
is that a reasonable expectation? And what do you expect?
Yeah, so like I think that, so looking at the next three, I mean, I would absolutely take a split on the road this week. Like if they could win one of Loyola Chicago, Duquesne, I think that would be really positive. And then GW at home, you win that. And kind of the way I've looked at it, as I've sort of broken down, so there's seven games left, right? Yeah, seven games left. So there's at home, you have GW, Fordham, Davidson. Feels right. So those are three. So right now they're 6-5 in A-10 play. Win your three home games, you get to 9 wins, and then you got to find a road win. Ideally two, but those four road games, Richmond, not going to be easy. VCU, not going to be easy. They're playing really good basketball, and I don't just – that's a tough place to play. Like, arguably, that and Dayton, the two toughest in the A-10. And then Duquesne, which, again, down this year, when we played them last time, they were missing Day-Day, was Day-Day Grant not playing in that game, I want to say.
And we were at home as well.
And at home, right. And that was a game Kreese just was a monster. So, and then you're dealing with Loyola Chicago. Like, if St. Joe's can win, I'll even say that's like one of those four road games, and then win the three home games and get to 10-8, I don't think that's, given the 0-3 start, that means you were 10-5 after that. I mean, I think you probably take that if they somehow found a way to win two road games, like say they go down to Richmond and win that somehow, and then win one of these two this week, or heck, just win the two this week. Those are your two easiest, like not easy, but easiest. I mean, if that happens and you get to 11-7, like I would then actually call, like given everything that transpired, I would say that 11-7 after an 0-3 start would be like really, really strong and would give you some momentum and lead you into A-10 tournament play, and with a little bit of juice. But again, like 10-8 even probably all things considered would be maybe like a C+, B-. But you can't lose all four road games. Like, and I know that there'll be underdogs in all four, but you just can't. Like, they need to find a way to win one of those four somehow, because 9-9 puts you dangerously in that, like, I don't know, that could be anywhere like 6-9 in the conference, and like I don't think you want to be there.
Nope. And you got to realize, if we're going to go into conference play with expectations, that's not played in Hagen Arena, you know?
Right.
So it's like, we got to show that we can win something on the road, because it's not going to be a friendly environment when we do go to play those games that truly matter. So. Pete, what are your thoughts? And then we'll close out the show.
I'll stick with Loyola Chicago. I think it's a tough matchup. We won three at their, you know, against Loyola last year. This year, lost one at Hagen. We're going into Loyola Chicago, where they've only lost two games at home this year. So I think that's a really tough matchup. I don't want to say who I think wins that one, because I think Drew Valentine has a vendetta against us that he wants to get right. And then Rhode Island, you know, all the other away games we have, URI, Bonnie's, like, these are tough. Or sorry, not URI. What else do we have? Duquesne, VCU, and Richmond. Those are all tough away games to have. So I don't know. 11-7 is hopeful. I'm hoping for 10-8. So that's where I'm at, Tony.
Nice. Well, we'll see. I'm not going to give a prediction. I think you guys, I'm in line with what all of you said. So we won't beat a dead horse. Matt, we appreciate you coming on the show as always, brother.
No, thanks. That was great. That was fun.
We're going to have the coaches segment next episode. That's when we'll really talk the X's and O's, and
there
Pete
we go.
And Matt will talk about all the issues with
coaching. Bring the whiteboard.
Yeah.
I'll bring the whiteboard and the red marker.
So you didn't hear about our Spotify deal? We're going to be like Joe Rogan. You'll have a not only the audio version, but the video with the whiteboard.
There we go. I love it.
Pete, close us out. You know the words.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Matt, for coming on. And as always, the Hawk will never die.